It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Karen Hartglass, and this is It's All About Food. Hi, I hope you're having a great day. I am. And I am the host of the show, It's All About Food. I have a new nonprofit called Responsible Eating and Living, which you can find more about at responsibleeatingandliving.com. I really enjoy my Wednesdays here at the Progressive Radio Network, where I get to talk about my very, very favorite subject, food. And the wonderful thing about food is that we can make some really tremendous, powerful impacts on the world and our own personal environment and health simply by what we choose to eat. And what I'm learning more and more every day is that the foods that I love to eat, the foods that I choose to eat, plant-based foods, are not only the best for my health, but the best for the planet, and certainly the kindest for the other living species we share this planet with. Okay, so if you have any concerns or confusions or questions about eating a vegan diet, eating a plant-based diet, if you're going to have any imbalances or things that you think you can't get on plant foods and you need to eat animal foods, we are going to be talking to two super experts today, Jack Norris and Virginia Messina. And I have some very, just a little brief bio about them both, so brief because they've both done so much, and we're going to talk about that during the hour. Jack Norris, RD, is co-founder and president of Vegan Outreach. His website, veganhealth.org, is considered to be the best source of vegan nutrition on the web. He lives in Oakland, California. And Virginia Messina serves on the advisory boards for the Vegetarian Resource Group and the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and she lives in Port Townsend, Washington, and they're the co-authors of this new book, Vegan for Life, Everything You Need to Know to Be Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. Welcome, Jack and Ginny, to It's All About Food.
Great to be here. Thank you, Karen.
Hi, how are both of you doing?
Just fine.
Doing good.
Gosh, I'm always saying my praises of technology. There's nothing greater than to be able to talk to people in different places all at the same time.
Right.
And we just had a little earthquake over here yesterday. Everything calm in Oakland and Port Townsend?
I think so. Everything's fine here.
Yeah, we're the ones who are supposed to be having the earthquakes.
Right. Well, we all need to shake things up a little bit.
I guess so.
Just to get balance. And you've been shaking things up for several decades now. All for the best. So how is it that the two of you teamed up to write this terrific book?
Jenny, would you like me to take that, I guess?
Yeah, sure. Jack and I have been colleagues and friends for a long time. We've worked together kind of over the internet and over email on a variety of topics related to veganism. And we just felt that it was time for this book, that so many people are interested in vegan diets but have so many questions about nutrition and about how to plan diets healthfully, that we decided to team up and write the book that was going to answer all of their questions.
Great. Did you want to add anything to that, Jack?
No, I think Jenny covered it.
Okay. Well, the great thing today, and I think you mentioned it too in the book, is that things are very different now than they were 20, 30 years ago, at least when I started on the vegetarian and vegan path. And there are certainly more foods available in the supermarkets, and it's just a joy now to go into the bookstores, and some of them actually have vegetarian and vegan sections filled with books.
Yes.
We need more of these books, and so it's great that you have this new book to offer and to put on those shelves.
Great. Thank you.
Now, the thing is, you know, I talk about this all the time. I'm sure you do, too. And the questions seem to be the same. And they may have become a little more sophisticated over time, and we'll touch on some of them. But the popular questions, like you've covered in your book, are protein and calcium, and is soy safe, and then a couple of nutrients, the big vitamin B12, and some of the other ones, and what we need to know about them. And we're going to try and cover some of the highlights from those things. The first thing I wanted to jump into is I'm not going to go over the question, where do you get your protein? Okay, I'm over. I'm done with that question. But what seems to be a little more interesting now is that, is the plant protein the same as animal protein? And what the things I've been hearing more now are about complete protein versus incomplete protein. And it's a funny thing because that's something that started, I think, when Frances Moore LePay came out with her book, Diet for a Small Planet, in the 70s. And then she kind of recounted some of the things that she had said about complete and incomplete protein in her revision of that book, maybe 10 years later or whenever it was. Can we talk about complete and incomplete protein with respect to plant foods especially?
I'd love to talk about protein. So there are some differences between plant and animal protein in general. The first thing I guess we should note is that all plant foods except for fruit do have all the amino acids and, you know, somewhat significant amounts. But some are deficient in one amino acid, and it depends on what food you're talking about. So legumes tend to be on the lower end for methionine, and other plant foods tend to be on the low end for lysine. It doesn't mean they don't contain any. It just means that they're lower in proportion. So Frances Moore LePay wasn't totally off when she suggested that we need to combine protein to make up for these differences, but she thought that you had to do it at each meal, and we later learned that you can do it throughout the day, which people are naturally going to do in most cases anyway. So the only time that a vegan should run into problems with protein would be if they're either eating not enough calories to maintain their body weight, or if they have avoided foods that are high in lysine, in other words, legume products, and also quinoa slips in there as a food high in lysine that's not a legume product. So some people, it's not real common, but some people do avoid all beans and all soy foods, and in those cases, they could come up short.
I can't imagine it, and I don't know why anyone would want to do it, but this is a wide world, and I'm sure you can find something of everything, so there are probably people out there that do that.
A lot of times it may be people just getting into the vegan diet that they've never eaten bean products their whole life.
Which is really amazing because in the rest of the world, beans have really sustained people, especially people in poverty, for so long.
It's true.
How did we get away from eating beans in this country?
Well, we came to rely on meat.
Meat, yeah. The other protein.
So people don't know to put legume products into their diet. And, you know, when some people try a vegan diet, their idea is you just eat vegetables, and that's how they can get off on this path. In some cases, people, you know, get gas from eating beans, so they may avoid them for that reason. And then some people think that soy foods are dangerous, so they avoid them. So some combination of those factors could cause someone to not eat legume products.
Now, we're talking about the amino acids that are called essential amino acids, which the human body cannot create, and so we need to ingest them in order to build bigger protein molecules. And now I remember that there were 8, and now I'm seeing that there are 9. Is it 8? Is it 9? Is it 8 some days and 9 other days?
Some are considered conditionally essential. In other words, if you're getting low amounts of some of the other essential amino acids, then one could become conditional. So I do see different ones listed. I see different, I can't think of the word now, but sometimes you will see a list of amino acids and one will be thrown in there as conditionally essential.
Okay.
But, you know, Karen, we don't want vegans to worry about that too much. They don't need to worry about individual amino acids. In our book, we give some very basic guidelines for meeting protein needs. The only thing that you need to do is make sure you're meeting calorie needs, eating a variety of foods, and including some lysine-rich foods in your diet, which are soy products, legumes, and quinoa. And as long as people are doing that, they're going to have the amino acids covered.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. I appreciate this book because it explains things, but then once you read it and know that you can do it, I think eating this way is simple and you don't have to think, my God, am I getting enough valine today or
right.
What's my histidine level like? As long as we're getting a variety of primarily whole plant-based foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds, and the body is so smart. And it has its stores and then goes to the store and pulls out whatever it needs to build whatever it needs.
Right.
Very good. And I'm glad, Jack, you mentioned the gas with beans. And I noticed you had a discussion, a little brief mention about the benefits of the gas or the sugar from the beans that creates gas and how that's beneficial for lowering the risk of colon cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a positive side to anything that may seemingly be annoying.
Right. That's right. Yeah. The sugars that are in beans are they encourage the growth of a certain type of bacteria in the colon, and that bacteria is associated with a lower risk for colon cancer. But it's kind of hard to convince people that that's a good thing when they're suffering from gas, when gas is uncomfortable and painful. So we do give some tips in the book for incorporating more legumes into your diet without suffering from the side effects that some people experience.
And walking after eating. We need to
mm-hmm.
move more. It's, we don't think about what's really inside of our bodies and our intestines and how long are they supposed to be inside of us. They're, like, super long.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all knotted and twisted up, and just moving kind of pushes things along and relieves so many little problems.
Right, that's right.
So keep...
If someone does have problems with gas and beans, there is a vegan... supplement that you can take, a digestive enzyme to prevent the gas. I think it's called Beanzyme.
Beanzyme.
Beanzyme. Let me look that up.
Okay, because I remember there are some out
sure.
on the market that are not vegan with gelatin,
right.
And I don't know how good they are. I've heard mixed reviews on them.
It's Beanzyme.
And the other thing that people can do is just soak beans several times, soak them and discard the water and soak them again. And if you do that a few times, it leaches those sugars out of the beans, the ones
right.
that cause the gas problems.
And just incorporating a little bit on a regular basis helps the body understand a little more
right.
and starts to make adjustments.
Yeah, as Jack said, most people in the United States are not used to eating beans. It's a foreign food for most of us, so adding them to your diet gradually can be really helpful.
Well, I love beans. I eat my
too.
Beans. And there are so many of them, and what's wonderful about them is they're so satisfying, and if you're trying to lose weight or you just want to feel satisfied, beans really do it.
Mm-hmm, they do.
Yep.
Okay. Let's move on to B12. And you really are singing the praises or the necessity throughout this book. It just keeps coming back. Oh, yeah, and don't forget B12. And now a commercial by B12, and please don't forget about your B12. And it's an important message because, you know, so often we read something and we see, oh, yeah, that's important, and then we forget about it. Or we read something and we need to hear things over and over again until we get it right. And this is a very important message.
Mm-hmm. It is. And unfortunately, some vegans have not heard the message and sometimes believe that they're going to get enough vitamin B12 just by eating organic vegetables that haven't been washed thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's a belief that B12 from the soil adheres to those vegetables. Or sometimes people think that fermented foods like miso are good sources of B12. And the research shows that you really can't get enough active vitamin B12 from those foods, from organic foods and from fermented foods. Vegans need to take a supplement or use fortified foods in order to get enough vitamin B12.
Well, from reading some of the things that you've written, it sounds like everybody should be supplementing, or at least people over a certain age should be supplementing
mm-hmm.
with B12. So it's not just the vegan problem.
The Institute of Medicine recommends that anyone over the age of 50 get half of the RDA for B12 through supplements or fortified foods, because once you reach that age, your ability to extract the B12 from animal products goes down. However, I do want to emphasize there is somewhat of a myth in vegan circles that B12 is not a specific problem for vegans. It's a problem for everyone, and that isn't really the case. Plant foods generally don't contain vitamin B12, so unless you're getting fortified foods or supplements, you're likely to run into trouble. And so I think it's just very important that vegans realize that this is something they do need to pay attention to. It's not hard to solve at all.
No, it isn't.
You need to actually make sure that you're solving it.
Do you know the history behind B12 and when we started realizing it was important?
I know somewhat of the history. In the mid-40s is when it was discovered. It was isolated. You know, for a while, there were a number of vitamins that were considered to be vitamin B, and they didn't realize at the time that they were different vitamins. And that's how you ended up with vitamin B1 and 2 and 3.
Mm.
And there was a 9 for a while, and now and B12. So they finally isolated vitamin B12 in the mid-40s, and that enabled them to cure people who have pernicious anemia, which is when someone cannot absorb B12 through
mm-hmm.
the normal routes. And what happens is you end up getting this, you get large blood cells, and which is anemia. It's a different form than iron-deficient anemia. And they weren't able to cure that until they discovered vitamin B12, and when they did, they were able to start curing people with pernicious anemia. And that's basically the history of it.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, it's just unfortunate, but it's true of everything, that there's so much misinformation and misunderstanding.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad you're talking about it in here. And anybody that's listening, get your B12. And just one thing, too, one more thing on B12, and that is the kind of B12, because I wasn't aware, because I've always been getting the, how do you say it, cobalamin?
Cyanocobalamin.
How do you say that?
Cyanocobalamin.
Oh, yeah. And so that's the form I get, but then there's another, we make that into another form, and you can get the form that we make, but it's not stable or something like that. I wasn't aware of that form.
It hasn't been studied quite as much as cyanocobalamin, and there's some indication that the supplements of methylcobalamin are not quite as stable. So we just need more research on that, and until we have the answers to that, Jack and I are recommending cyanocobalamin.
Well, one of my favorite places to get B12 is nutritional yeast, Red Star nutritional yeast, and I love putting it in so many different foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ordered a 5-pound bag of it, and I can't wait for it to come from bulkfoods.com, I think. Yeah, bulkfoods.com. They have a good deal on Red Star nutritional yeast in bulk.
And one thing that you want to be sure of is that it's the the type of nutritional yeast that is grown on a B12-rich medium. Red Star makes a brand of nutritional yeast called Vegetarian
Support
Formula.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. That's the winner.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very important. And, of course, you can get B12 from fortified foods as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of fortified foods. I like to have all of my foods just as simple as possible, and then I mix the things that I think I need, but that's just my own little personal nuttiness. Okay, let's just jump to calcium for a minute, because that's another one of the big ones. When do you get your calcium? And, you know, again, it's a nutrient that everyone's concerned about, not just vegans and vegetarians. And this is one of the things that always drives me crazy, and probably you too. We have a crisis going on in the United States, and it's extending out to the rest of the world. The standard American diet is an epidemic, and it's creating all kinds of horrific chronic illness that's preventable and reversible, and it's destroying our environment. It's just a nightmare, and yet it seems when we talk about a vegan diet, everybody's like, you know, where do you get this, where do you get that, instead of focusing on what everyone's eating today, and they're not getting the nutrition they need, and they're getting too many things that they shouldn't be eating. It's just a crazy sci-fi movie that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that what this really shows is that no matter what type of diet you eat, there are certain things that you need to pay attention to. And certainly vegans have a lot of health advantages. There are a lot of things that we don't need to worry about, like cholesterol and saturated fat, and we get plenty of fiber much more easily. But because it's a different way of eating from the way most Americans eat and the way most of us grew up eating, there are nutrients that we need to give some attention to.
Mm-hmm. And calcium is one of them.
Calcium is one of them. Just because most people are used to getting it from dairy foods and don't realize that there are good plant sources of calcium.
Well, one of my favorite foods is dark leafy green vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I get some of my calcium from those guys.
Right.
Just like all those big, muscly animals get their calcium and their strong bones from all the green leaves and green grass that they eat. Okay. Let's see. Another vitamin that's big in the news is vitamin D, and everybody seems to be connecting it to every major chronic disease today, saying that vitamin D deficiency is a part of it. What's interesting, too, I was reading on your blog, Jack, about a I have to back up a little bit, but there's vitamin D3, which comes from animals, and vitamin D2, which is synthesized and is not an animal form.
It's not an animal form. It's usually made from yeast, exposing yeast to sunlight.
Okay, right. So synthesized from yeast. Or grown from yeast.
Well, the yeast, I mean, it's not unnatural. The yeast synthesizes it. It comes from yeast, not animals.
Right. And so now there may be a plant form of vitamin D3?
That is correct. A company called Vitashine that's in Britain just recently developed a process of getting vitamin D3 from lichen. And so they should have a supplement available in the next few weeks, is my understanding, that you can get D3. Now, I don't necessarily think that people need vitamin D3 over vitamin D2.
Mm-hmm.
But in some cases, once in a while, we come across people who have a stubborn case of vitamin D deficiency, and vitamin D2 doesn't seem to be increasing their levels effectively, and in those cases, I would recommend that they try vitamin D3.
Mm.
For the most part, though, vegans do not need to worry about getting vitamin D3 versus D2. And if you're in the sun regularly every day, then you also don't need to worry about getting vitamin D through your diet. But I think that's unusual these days.
Yeah.
And I should point out that you can't be wearing sunscreen for Basically, the rule is if you can stay out, you need to be in the sun when sunburn is possible without sunscreen. And for about, it depends how much of your body's surface is being exposed to the sun, but if it's, say, your arms and face, then it would be about 15 minutes, and a little bit longer if you're dark-skinned or older, up to a half an hour. But you really, because of skin cancer concerns, you shouldn't stay out in the sun when you're possible to be sun, when it's possible to get sunburned for more than half the time it would take to get sunburned. So I'm sorry about all these qualifications.
No, but it's really interesting and important that you qualify that the sun needs to be the sun where you can get sunburned. It needs to be
right.
That time and that strength, just not stay in it that long.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So
yeah.
I like to spend just when I can get a chance during midday, just lay out in the sun with my shirt off for about 8 minutes. And then turn over and lay for another 8 for my back, and that, I'm not sure how much vitamin D I get from that, but I'm guessing it's quite a bit, and I'm actually getting my vitamin D levels tested in the next few days, so we'll know at that point how well
find
it's going.
Out.
You know, that's interesting that you bring up getting your vitamin D tested, and I wanted to ask about this, and that is, you talk about a number of different nutrients in this book, and some of them are a little more unknown to people, like DHA and vitamin D. Vitamin D is getting more popular for people to get blood tests for because we're realizing how important it is. But to check our DHA level, you know, I remember asking a number of doctors saying I wanted it done, and they looked at me like, huh?
Well, there's only 3 labs that test DHA levels in the United States at this time, and so it is not a common test. And I don't necessarily recommend that people, I don't think you need to run out and get your DHA tested. I think it's a good idea to get vitamin D tested because so many people have found themselves to be deficient. That's both vegans and non-vegans alike. And so if you're going to the doctor and getting a checkup anyway and they're going to do any blood tests, I would throw in vitamin D as well just to make sure that it's at a decent level. But DHA is something, you know, it's controversial as to whether vegans even need to be supplementing with DHA, but we think that people should as a safety measure, but I don't think you need to run out and get your DHA levels tested. It's not even clear what that tells you if you were to do it. I mean, if it was an extremely low amount, then it's a probably good indication that you should be supplementing, but generally, it's not well-developed. Testing DHA levels is not a well-developed science at this point. And I'm sorry to dominate the conversation. Jenny, if you have anything to add.
That's okay. I wanted to add that some people believe that they don't need to supplement, that they just need to monitor their blood levels and get vitamin D and vitamin B12 tested periodically to make sure that it's not too low. And we really advise against that. Nutrition is supposed to be preventative. You don't want to wait until you have a deficiency and then start to supplement. So, you know, as Jack said, it is a good idea to get your vitamin D levels tested, but whether you're getting blood levels tested of anything or not, we, you know, highly recommend taking these supplements. Vitamin D, if you're not getting enough sun exposure, definitely vitamin B12 and probably DHA.
Right. I guess the thing behind the DHA, since we need to know more about it, is that some people have told me it's expensive to get it.
It is.
And,
right.
And the vegan version is expensive. Well, I put that in quotes. I mean, it depends on what you value and, you know, because
right.
People spend a lot of money on some things that I think are totally like, what? And, you know, when it comes to health and feeling good, you know, I don't think I can do enough.
A DHA supplement costs about, it's about the cost of 4 designer beers at a brewery. First every 3 months, so.
There
anyway.
You go. I love that.
And
yeah.
We do our recommended dosage is fairly small, and it's just several times a week. We recommend 200 to 300 micrograms of DHA every 2 or 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's expensive, a bottle of that supplement will go a long way.
Right. I guess the hardest part for me is the kind that I have is refrigerated. Are they all refrigerated?
Yes.
Yeah, and I forget about them. I forget about them in the refrigerator. That's my problem.
You have to put a little post-it note on your computer.
There we go. I'm going to do that. Okay, we need to take a quick break, and I have so much more I want to talk to you two about. So can you stay with us, and we'll be right back?
Sure.
Okay, great. Thank you. Hello, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I'm speaking with the co-authors of Vegan for Life, Everything You Need to Know to Be Healthy and Fit on a Plant-Based Diet. And that's Jack Norris. He's got a website at jacknorrisrd.com. And Ginny Messina, whose website is theveganrd.com. Both of them are excellent resources, and I invite you to check them out and read everything that's there, and we'll quiz you on it later. Oh, okay. Yes, Jack.
Oh, I was just going to say I'd be scared for you to quiz me on it later.
Okay, well, we're quizzing you right now.
Okay.
Okay. So, okay. I'm just, I just want to talk about the social part of it now, the vegan scene, because I think the hardest part for people is dealing with the real world. And that means your partner, your spouse, your children, especially if they're teenagers. And that means if you want to transition to a plant-based diet and dealing with everyone around you who doesn't, or if someone in your family wants to and you don't know that it's a good idea and don't know how to do it. And then that expands to the school, the office, so many things. And so we're learning from this book of yours that it's perfectly healthy to eat a plant-based diet. Do you have any advice for people that are dealing with the people around them?
Well, it depends on so many factors. And certainly the world is becoming much more vegan-friendly, although it depends on where you live and depends on your family and your social circles. But there are so many vegan foods that are considered to be pretty mainstream now. For example, hummus is a food that I didn't eat when I was growing up. I never heard of it.
Isn't that amazing how it's everywhere?
It's everywhere now. The first time I had it, I thought it was something exotic, and now it's something that everybody seems to have in their lunchbox. So,
and in case people don't know, hummus is made from a bean.
It's made from a bean. It's a great way to introduce beans into your diet. So I think that, you know, when you're in situations where you're dining with people who are not vegan, or you need to prepare food for non-vegans, sticking with things that are a little bit familiar, and some really simple things, you know, pasta primavera or pasta with marinara sauce, lentil soup. There are all kinds of dishes that are familiar and comfortable to non-vegans. And when you concentrate on those, it's pretty easy to come up with meals that make everybody happy.
Burritos are pretty common foods that everyone eats.
Yeah, there are so many. There are so many easy to simply modify and get the meat out or keep the cheese off. And that's a good thing.
Peanut butter and jelly. And peanuts are considered a legume.
Mm-hmm.
So
another bean.
They're very high in protein.
We love peanut butter. Now, I just want to say one thing about peanut butter. My peanut butter consists of peanuts.
Right.
And many people, if they turn the label around on Jif and Skippy, will read a lot of foreign words that you can't even pronounce. Peanuts might be in there somewhere. But I think peanut butter should just be peanuts and maybe peanuts and salt. I'm not a salt fan, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. Most grocery stores do carry a more natural brand of peanut butter than
Yes.
you mentioned.
Yes, they've been around for a long time, but I still find Skippy and Jif in some people's pantries.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And they have that evil hydrogenated oil in there.
Uh-huh.
Right, and the all-natural peanut butter doesn't have any trans fat, so that's always a good choice.
Now, okay, I know for me, the reason why I started eating plant foods, I was a teenager, I didn't want to kill animals. And I know that that's an important piece for both of you as well. And Jack,
right.
You have those incredible, those vegan outreach pamphlets that have changed so many people. And,
right, thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's just tremendous what a little thing can do. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't little to put it together, but that just spread like wildfire. Certainly I would have liked it to have spread a lot more because we've got a long way to go in terms of making factory farming a thing of the past.
Right.
Where do you
see?
Well,
we are making good progress.
Yes.
I mean, it's too slow, but if you look at history and, advances for animals has actually been coming on relatively quickly in the last couple decades. When you look back to, say, that the Civil Rights Movement, the Civil Rights Act was just passed in the 1960s, and now we're well on our way to making that veganism is now a fairly household word in most places, even if people aren't vegans, they at least know the term and talk about it. So, and as you mentioned earlier, all the new vegan foods in the stores and vegan restaurants, we've really made a lot of progress.
I know that it depends on how you look at numbers in terms of seeing what the changes are. Certainly there are more people in the world today, and there as the other countries, China and India especially, as they become more developed, they're changing their dietary habits, and unfortunately they're not changing them for the better. And they're increasing their animal food intake, and so we see an increase of factory-farmed animals, while at the same time there's more people that are choosing to eat more plant foods. It's kind of an interesting contrast of things that are going on at the same time. But let's just stick with the United States. What are some of the good things that have happened with respect to factory farming? Are there any, let me rephrase that question. People, there are different organizations, for example, that promote legislation that may improve the animal's condition while in factory farms, and I'm not sure how either of you feel about those issues. Personally, I just want to see it all go away as fast as possible.
I want to see it go away too, and that is certainly definitely the goal of those of us who are involved in vegan activism. In the meantime, because factory farming is so pervasive, I personally feel that it's important to do everything possible to improve conditions for animals, to reduce their suffering in any way that we can. And hopefully some of these changes also drive the prices of animal foods up, which may encourage people to choose more plant-based meals. But I think that the most important thing that's happened is that people are aware of factory farming now, and they weren't 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the undercover investigations and just all of the information. You know, we have a whole chapter in our book about factory farming and about how these animals suffer on modern farms. And I think that that's the most important thing is awareness about where our food comes from.
People need to know that if they're eating animal foods, meat, chicken, fish, dairy, eggs, something like 99% of them are grown in ways where animals suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just talking about the final slaughter where they're killed. It's their whole life. And some people think that when they eat organic or when they eat kosher foods, that the animals are treated a lot better. You talk a little bit about the slaughter process of kosher foods in your book. And but aside from that, the animals that are raised for kosher meat still don't live their lives in a better situation.
That's true.
Yeah.
They come from, for the most part, they would come from factory farms.
Mm-hmm. So the religious law talks about how the animal's supposed to be slaughtered, but ideally the whole point of the law is so the animals don't experience any pain and really minimal suffering, and that's not happening.
No, it's not. And a lot of it just has to do with volume, with numbers, you know, even with the best intentions, or it's the number of animals that are killed for food is just so high that it's impossible to protect their interests in any way in the slaughterhouse.
Oh, yes. Well, it's important for people to know about this. I can't think about it for too long because then I can't really do my work because it's so horrifying.
But we can all be vegan.
We can all be vegan, you know.
And we can make a difference that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, you make this point in the book, there are just some things we don't know about nutrition. There's a lot we do know, but there are some things we don't have the answers for. And so much of the research, it's really hard to figure a lot of things out. It's expensive to do studies, but also this reductionist concept of just isolating one nutrient to see what it does, our bodies don't work that way. They work in harmony with lots of different things, and it's really hard to study that many different variables and see how they affect our health. So there's just a lot we don't know. But a lot we do know, and I want to think that one thing that's really clear, if we're not certain that a vegan diet is the ideal diet, we do know that a diet based in plant foods is best.
Right. Yeah, and we talk about that a little bit in Vegan for Life, the fact that eating a diet that's low in saturated fat and high in fiber is certainly the healthiest way to eat, and that's a diet based on plant foods. So we know that that's important, to eat mostly plant foods for your health.
Mm-hmm.
And from an ethical perspective, we recommend eating all plant foods because then you're not contributing to the suffering of any animals.
And the environment.
And the environment.
Yeah, it's just crazy what's going on today. And, you know, I was talking to Mia McDonald last week and her organization, Brighter Green, and it's heart-wrenching to hear that as we're learning that animal foods aren't good for us and our health is declining in the United States, to see these other countries wanting to be just like us,
mm-hmm.
only
yeah.
just like us maybe 10 or 20 years earlier before we knew some things that we know today, it just...
Huh. And I think it's up to us to redefine the Western diet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do we change the standard American diet so that it doesn't spell sad? Something like maybe STAR. We can use an acronym like that. I'm going to have to work on that. The Standard Terrific American Regimen. Stay tuned. Okay, now what about kids and teenagers who are really picky eaters? You have some discussion about some diets and menus for them.
We do. We have some menus for kids and some a food guide for vegan children, and we also have some information, some really fun information about families who have raised their kids as vegans and how well they've done. And Jack has some photographs of those kids on his website. One thing to keep in mind is that being a picky eater, kids who are picky eaters, that's kind of a universal problem
mm-hmm.
for all parents. All parents have trouble getting their kids to eat enough vegetables, and that's not unique to vegans at all. So we give some hints for getting more protein-rich foods into children's diet. Jack had mentioned peanut butter. That's a great choice. And, again, hummus or any kind of a bean spread, those are good choices for kids as well. Kids like pasta, whole grain muffins, fruits, trail mix. There are lots of foods that are familiar and that you'll find in most households that are really good vegan choices.
Good. I think it's I can't really say because I don't have children. So I feel like I can't fairly speak on this subject. I just know that, well, I remember when I was a teenager. Enough said. I made things very challenging.
I do get frustrated at times that often a woman will be vegan, and as soon as she becomes pregnant, you know, she goes back to eating animal products. So there seems to be this persistent idea that you can't be vegan and have a healthy child, and that's simply not the case. And if anyone out there is interested in more info, as Jenny said, our website, veganhealth.org, has a section on on real vegan kids whose mothers were vegan during pregnancy, and our book has sections on that.
Well, it's really important to, you know, I know that these individual stories are just anecdotes, but they're important to read to know that they exist, because I think when we use the word anecdotal, I realize that it means individual stories, and so we have to be careful when we look at that information, either if someone's promoting it to try and promote a way of life or a diet or a product. But no matter what, especially if it's somebody we know who's been doing something and doing well with it, it's information that we can't ignore.
Right, and I think that these stories of real vegan children that are on veganhealth.org, I think that people will be very reassured when they see those, if they're uncomfortable or have questions about raising vegan kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just seeing that these kids have done well and they look great, the pictures are fantastic. I think that's going to reassure most parents that a vegan diet can be healthy.
Well,
there's not a ton of research on it, there has been one study done. It's quite old now, but there was a vegan commune. I think the study came out in the early 80s. Jenny, is that right?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You talk about it in your book.
Mm-hmm, we do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a research backing up the idea that people can have vegan pregnancies and vegan infants and children, and they'll be healthy. In addition to the anecdotal reports that we have.
Right. Well, I know many, and they're all thriving. So there's certainly more. There's certainly more and more of them, and they're getting older. And it'll be really curious to see how they all fare in adult life. Most of the ones that I know are in their teens or in their 20s, and they're all gorgeous. Just simply inside and out. Okay, well, we just have a few minutes left, and I just had something that slipped my mind, which is not a good thing. Maybe I need more B12. Are there any other highlights in this book that we didn't talk about that you think are important?
Jenny, do you have anything?
Well, you know, we talked to, just so that people know, the book does cover almost every circumstance of the life cycle. We talk about planning healthy vegan diets for pregnant women, for breastfeeding, and for kids starting from infancy all the way through adolescence. We also have a pretty thorough chapter on sports nutrition, or nutrition for people who are involved in exercise and sports and want to follow a vegan diet. And we have some tips on how to do that. And also information about how to eat on a budget, information for older people over the age of 50 who might have some different nutrient needs. And we address those from a vegan perspective.
It's really good that you touched on all of those different subjects, and especially for seniors. You know, a lot of times I hate this expression, but you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. and I apologize to all those dogs. But for those older people who have changed their diets, it's amazing what I've seen. And I know some of them really well, just all the weight that they've lost, the tone of their skin has changed, the clarity in their eyes has improved, and it's just amazing. It's amazing how the body can really change so quickly when we give it the nutrition it needs and take away the toxins that it doesn't like.
Well, I think we see a lot of people adopting plant-based diets, and as they get older and they're worried about heart disease and weight gain, of course, and plant-based diets can be a good, healthy way to deal with, to prevent those kinds of problems, along with exercise and just an overall healthy lifestyle.
Now, you're both registered dietitians, and I don't remember where each of you studied, but I still know a lot of dietitians today, and especially new ones that are coming out, still don't have the information, well, at least information promoting or supporting plant-based diets. I know that maybe there's some improvement, but I still speak to a lot of dietitians today that just don't know a lot of information.
Well, vegan diets are not the specialty of most registered dietitians as they come out of school, that's for sure. The discipline has been moved towards encouraging more plant foods than it was in the past, but yeah,
we still have some work to do.
I mean, they're not a vegan advocacy organization by any means.
Yeah, but I mean, we're learning that we have these epidemics in this country, diabetes and heart disease. And when you go to their websites, they all say we have to eat more fruits and vegetables. They could go a lot further.
They could go a lot further, and they do. You know, they do encourage many of the right things: higher fiber intake, reducing intake of animal foods, and eating more plant foods. But it's definitely not a vegan perspective. It might be a perspective that encourages a more plant-based diet, but it's not vegan.
Okay, I just have one last question, and that is, the USDA recently came out with the new My Plate, Choose My Plate.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think about that?
Jenny, what do you think about it?
Well, I think it was certainly a step in the right direction. It does encourage people to fill up 75% of their plate with fruits, vegetables, and grains, and that's a really good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows for plant proteins in place of meat proteins if people want that. For me, kind of a sticking point is the little dairy group that's on the outside of that plate.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, that's just an old-fashioned way of thinking about meeting calcium needs, because one of the things that we emphasize in our food guide is that all of the food groups include foods that are good sources of calcium.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember reading that, and that is so important that we don't have to, and maybe this is a good way to summarize things. You don't have to be a dietitian. You don't have to be a specialist in nutrition. You just have to eat a lot of varied fruits and vegetables, lots of colors, stay away from the junk. And you, for the most part, you're going to be getting all the nutrition you need, and you might need to supplement one or two things, especially
B12.
Right. But it's really not that difficult.
No, it's not.
Well, Jenny and Jack, thank you so much. Please visit jacknorrisrd.com and theveganrd.com and check out the book Vegan for Life, everything you need to know to be healthy and fit on a plant-based diet. Thank you so much for everything that you do. I've learned a lot.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you've been listening to It's All About Food. Thank you so much for joining me. Eat some beans today and have a delicious week. Bye-bye.